Welcome to the Surviving Grief Podcast, hosted by our grief ministry leaders at Crossroads Church. We'll be sitting down with friends as they share their powerful stories of loss and healing, and we'll hear from grief professionals and other wise people with useful tools for our own time of grief. If you're supporting someone who's grieving, you'll learn how to comfort them and walk with them on their own path to healing. Let's join the conversation.
It's always really difficult to answer a why question in the midst of pain, because when we're in pain from losing a loved one, we're bruised, we're grief-stricken, we're bleeding, if not physically bleeding, emotionally bleeding. But in that situation, someone normally wants some framework for why this is the way it is. And I always hesitate to give an answer because it just sounds so academic in the midst of the intense feelings that we're going through. So sometimes this helps, sometimes it doesn't, but whether it helps or not, this is the truth as I believe it. And the truth will have its proper healing effect in the right time. We've got to go all the way back and recognize that part of the blessing of being human is that we have choices. True choices. Now, all of the animal kingdom to one degree or another has a choice. I hunt. That deer has a choice whether or not it's going to come to the corn or not come to the corn that day. It has a choice. But deer are also governed by a much more rudimentary animalistic urge than we are. They're not exercising free choice as to what their hobby is going to be. They aren't even really exercising that much free choice as to who they're going to have sex with or be bonded with. They don't have mates. Who they get bonded with is the doe gets bonded with whatever buck wins in the showdown that happened the next field over. There's just not that sort of choice. Men and women are created in the image of God. Entities, animals, are not created in the image of God. We have capacities that animals don't. Of all the things that I've hunted, and I'm not trying to push the buttons of vegans here at all, just saying that I respect your conviction. All the things I've hunted, I've never seen grieving with any animal that's lost a friend. I've never seen grieving with any doe that went down when the mama doe was nearby. I've never seen it. It's because we have the capacity to grieve like the animal kingdom doesn't. Even if somebody catches it on film that it seems some animal is putting out a shriek or asking for its young one to come by. There's those videos out there. But let me tell you, being in the wild, that doesn't affect that animal's life at all. There might be a momentary where's the one who's supposed to be my family, but they move right on with life. But we as human beings, we don't move on, and it's part of it is because of this thing of choice. We have the ability to choose things that animals don't. We can choose who to love. We can choose to get married. We can choose to have a child. The animalistic they don't choose. Biology is just telling them reproduce, reproduce, reproduce. We have this choice. Now, where does this choice come from? It comes from God because we're created in the image of God. He's given us choice. Whenever somebody says, why has this happened to me? And if they're past their grieving and they're sort of in a debating, accusation kind of standpoint, the way many atheists are, who aren't dealing with personal grief, they just use it as a way to prove that I'm wrong in believing that there is a loving creator. I'll point out to them, what did you want? Did you want me to believe in a God that just preloaded MS God on our minds? Software that just made us do whatever God wanted to do? That would be the elimination of choice. Love means there has to be a choice. Love means I choose somebody to marry. Love means I choose to have a child. We're the only ones who are capable of love, and God gives us choices. What would you rather have? A mechanical dog that's wired to jump around and come to you because it's pre-programmed, or an actual puppy that out of love and care for you, it wants to come with you. I think that's the way it is with God. He's given us freedom and choice, and he has love, and he gives us the capacity to choose him and come to him. Now, this is a long way around to talking about grief. What does this have to do with grief and the awful thing that's happened to me? The awful thing that's happened to you and I is a result of free choice. Somebody else's free choice brought this on us. A drunk driver chose to have too many drinks and cross the center line and hit the car in your loved one. And we can say, why didn't God stop that? I don't think we'll know until we get to heaven exactly how many times God has stopped that. We accuse God of not doing things, but we don't know how many times we've done things. And whenever I'm in a room of people, I'll often ask, how many of us can identify a time when we should have died? And invariably, massive amounts of hands go up. Massive amounts do. We recognize this is probably a time where God spared my life. And there's probably innumerable other times where God spared our life that we don't give him credit. We have no idea how many black plagues have been averted since the Middle Ages. We have no concept. How many drunk people could have come across a middle line? I drove drunk in high school all the time. In the early 80s, it wasn't a big deal. My friend and I were driving drunk. He was driving. I was in the passenger seat. He crossed the yellow line going 95 miles an hour in a Chevy Nova. And impairment speed was down and everything else like that. And we clipped a car, hit a tree. Cops came up to us, called in tow truck and what have you. And I never even asked if we were drinking. It just wasn't a thing. I go, oh my goodness, how did we not kill that person the other way? How do we not get ticketed? How is our life not changed? Our life should have been changed. It was really irresponsible. We just didn't know about that thing. All I have to say is this. There are things that all of us have done that God's protected us from, and we have no idea the things that he has kept from happening to us that could have happened. Let's stop blaming God because we have no idea how many times he's helped us. Now, if we want to blame God because I lost my child to a drunk driver, it's understandable, but we also have to recognize that's what happens when you have choice. When God allows choice, choice can have painful repercussions for us. And if were he to step in every single time pain would happen, then he wouldn't be giving us choice. He would just be the ultimate traffic cop, changing and stopping things. I think another thing to recognize is that when God creates the world, and this is in the Bible gives us an account of these things. The Bible helps us understand reality, helps us understand that we are unique. We're humans. We're not animals. We're created in the image of God. We have the ability to innovate, to think of computer chips, to figure out everything from how to go down to the bottom of the ocean to how to fly. Even though we don't have fins and even though we don't have feathers, we can do these things because we're created in the image of God. We have creative capacities that no other entity has. When God puts us with these creative capacities onto the earth, as the Bible tells us, the world is created perfect. In the Genesis account, at the end of every day, God looks at it and God says, it was good. It was good. It was good because it's full, it's complete. What is to happen when God creates something that is perfect and he introduces free will into the mix? There's only one thing that can happen. It can only get worse. If God's created and it's perfect, and now free will, it can only go downhill. We're not going to make it more perfect. Perfect is perfect. We're not going to make it more perfect. So God, out of a relationship for love, wanting us to love him and be like him, when he introduces the wild card of human choice as image bearers, he introduces the possibility for pain and death and grief. So I think whenever we're ready for it, whenever we're ready to ask these questions and hear these sort of static theological answers in the midst of our pain, at some point we have to at least ask ourselves, would I rather have no choice and no love, or would I rather have my loved one still alive? Because that's the only way my loved one is still alive, if there's no choice and no love. on the whole, I think I'll take my chances with the pain and the difficulty and the loss, knowing that day by day, week by week, month by month, year by year, I can enjoy a freeness with God out of love and choice that would not be there if God just spared me of every single piece of difficulty.
Brian, for the people who do enter into grief with an existing faith and a relationship with God, you know, one of the key questions that comes up time and time again is, I had faith. I prayed. The Bible tells me to pray for healing, to do these things. He didn't intercede. And then I know somebody else. He healed that person. Why not me? And there's this root of bitterness that really takes place that he healed someone else. Why not my loved one? Why didn't he protect my child or whatever the loss is? How would you encourage that person?
Boy, there's a number of deep concepts here. And when these answers, by the way, they're not your standard pop answers. And that's part of why we have our standard difficult understandings of our situation, because many of us have only been bred in the standard pop answer. One of them is, well, if you pray and you have a prayer life, and God will answer and hear your prayer. He will answer. He will hear your prayer. And many times the answer is no. There is such a thing as a miracle. I personally had a part in a number of miracles. Miracles are when the normal things are superseded and God intervenes. It's amazing when it happens, and it's rare. That's why it's called a miracle. But in the Christian faith, we tend to just talk about those things all of the time, and it creates a sense of expectancy that, okay, I'm covered, so that should be happening for me too. No, it won't necessarily happen for you too. And then you complicate it further, is we all feel in many ways like orphan children, that God's holding out on us, that God's not fair. And so then when somebody else we know gets a miracle, gets a healing, and we don't, we immediately have to do one of two things. God's not good. God doesn't care about me, or he doesn't exist at all. We have to like slam God, or we slam ourselves. I'm a loser. I guess God doesn't care about me enough to heal me. You know, that's one thing that we don't talk about. Now, the second thing is, I don't think that we exalt enough in Bible-believing Christian communities that suffering's part of the deal we get into. Jesus says, take up your cross and follow me. He's saying, get ready to suffer. God saw his son die before his very eyes. The father suffered. When you've lost a child, God goes, yeah, I know what that's like. All the disciples, except for John, died a premature, painful death of execution. They all saw their friends die. And they didn't have struggles in faith of why didn't God step in? Why did this happen? Because God was clear. You're going to pick up your cross and tough stuff's going to happen. And I'm just saying more and more to current followers of Christ, we've got to reclaim a theology of suffering. It's part of what we do. And when I see someone who abandons the faith, it always is because they don't like their life. And that could be they thought that if they did these things, they'd have more money. They thought they did these things, they'd be married. Or they thought they did these things or thought the right things. Pain and loss would come their way. And I just feel bad for them because somewhere along the line, somebody in a position of leadership or they themselves chose a leader that would tell them what they wanted to hear, which is everything's going to be fine if you believe in God. And that's just a lie. Philippians 1:29, unto you it has been granted to suffer. Granted? It's like it's a gift. Are you kidding me? Those of us who've gone through significant, serious loss, years later, we can come to understand that verse because we see we're deeper with God. We're fortified. We're forged in a way that the person who's lived in Pollyanna land is not.
Yeah, it's easy to say that you have this rich faith, but it is that suffering and that testing that really peels back the layers of
correct.
What is this faith even made
correct.
Of? You know, after I lost my sister, there was so much crying out to God that I got to a abasement to my faith of either you're real or you're not, but I can't do this on my own. And so for you, when you look at the loss that you've experienced either from a peripheral or personally, have you had those kind of basement moments where you are on your knees, you have nothing left in that the pain is so acute from that grieving?
Boy, this is really good fleshing out that question. I want to make sure I'm clear that if you're in the basement and if you're asking those questions and if you're doubting your faith and if you're crying out to God and if you're mad about God, all that's healthy, actually. That's fine. I'm merely talking about why you would just cash in and leave. Cash in and leave, well, what do you have? You're just admitting that there isn't an entity who has your back in any situation. You're also kind of saying at the end, in the end, God, it was really about I'm in it for myself. And I thought we had a bargain. You didn't do what I wanted for me. And it really was all about me. But there's a process to go through. And I think if we're in that process, I think that's really necessary and helpful. When you are at the bottom and you're not sure if you're going to give it up or not, I think that is the time to do an inventory of all the things that God has done for you, all the ways that he has blessed you, all the way that things have turned out for you. And while this situation may be awful, and maybe in the moment more awful than all the other things added up, but still at least to see the perspective of where God is. One of the worst things I ever experienced, death right before me, death before my eyes. I'm very, very thankful that to this point, this is not a topic that's hit close to my nuclear family. Very thankful for that. I've got both sets of parents and parent-in-laws still. Lib went through a stroke that I thought was going to change both of our lives forever, but it was one of those miracles. Saw that. I've got three kids who've never been seriously ill. I got five grandkids who've never. Well, one I actually thought we might lose. Recently, it was like, oh, geez, this is like at birth. It was like, oh, my gosh, this is not good, you know. Came through it. Everything looks fine. But I'm admitting that I'm thankful that I've not had to face this with my most innermost nuclear family. But I've stared death in the face a number of times. One of the more painful times was when Carrie, during our awaited production, Christmas production, when she fell to her death on opening night of that Christmas production. I mean, here you are, it's Christmas, you're supposed to be happy, you're supposed to be joyful. And here's a young woman, the prime of her life, she's, what was she, 20, 21, something like that. And she's serving as a magi in her church, doing something she loved, which is ropes, courses, basically. She's tethered to the ceiling and she's flying around as one of the magi, and rope lets go, the carabiner lets go, falls to her death in the middle of the room, and everybody sees it, and it's horrific. And I'm told by her parents, we can't get down there for a while. We need you to be in that hospital room with our daughter. We would not want her dying with a bunch of lifeless machines. I said, because up to that point, I was thinking, wait a minute, why am I here at the hospital? Am I here as a pastor who's pastoring somebody who's in pain? Am I here as a CEO of an organization knowing I need to be present? And this, am I here as a, I mean, what am I here? And when they said, we need you to go in there and be her father. I was like, okay, got it. I can do that. And so I just went in and basically fathered a lifeless figure who had the smallest amount of brain activity, was under a heating blanket, praying like crazy prayers, like the kind of prayers hospital staff thought I was crazy, right? I'm dancing around and singing in the ICU, in the hospital, asking for God to raise this woman, me and a friend of mine. And God didn't. Dead. I had to remind myself in the midst of that things that I knew. You know, we know certain things, but it's the process of reminding yourself of those things that you know that really helps your faith, you know. I had to remind myself, okay, hold on. It's not about this world. It's about eternity. And this is a blink of an eye for Carrie. And she was helping people get to eternity. Okay, remind me. And I go, hold on. It's not about this life. It's about the whole life. And Carrie actually died a dream death. She was serving God, trying to bring people to him. And in all likelihood, while I believe she was brain dead immediately, there probably wasn't any pain. It was probably instantaneous. You know, okay. Okay, hold on. I've told myself, and I know this, that the giants in the faith always have suffering. Every single one. You can't find a giant in the faith that's in the Bible that hasn't had suffering. Every single one. It's one of the marks. And so, okay, well, that's right. If I sign up for a life of following Christ, I have to sign up for a life of the cross. I have to sign up for a life of processing suffering different than the average person. And so, you know, you think about those things. It doesn't mean it goes away. It doesn't mean you feel better immediately, but you have to ground yourself in the reality of the faith that millions and millions and millions of people do and works for them. I interact with people who are literally killed for their faith in other parts of the country. They don't, or have awful health care, and have people who just die when they shouldn't have died. They don't have good water. They don't make it a thing that's God's fault. It's part of the faith journey. I think we'd be well to take a lesson from them.
And that perspective shift also in the fullness of time, how God doesn't cause these things, and yet he will redeem that pain. And so I appreciate you sharing about Carrie. And so you talk about as time marches forward, because it always does.
Always does.
What did that redemption story look like? Because for some people, those legacies carry far and wide, more so than it ever did when they were alive. And then for other people, it's their story of loss impacts one person, and there is a faith seed that grows because of it. And both are vitally important. So for Carrie, in your life, kind of as time moved on and we transformed through that grief process. What did that look like for you, just the redemption piece?
Yeah, well, Corinthians tells us that God meets us in our suffering, our pain, so that we can meet others. So God never wastes anything. And one of the things that happens is you become qualified to help somebody else in their time of pain and their time of suffering. How did it redeem with Carrie? I think if you asked her family, I don't know if they would have an answer to that. I think it always hurt. Her mother just recently died at Christmas. Like, I feel so bad for her dad, who I've been in touch with off and on. Like, my gosh, Christmas just awful for that man. Loses his daughter, loses his wife at Christmas. How does God redeem it? If we're talking about the word redeem, like make me feel good about it, there's some things I don't know that we're ever going to feel good about. But redeeming it, meaning God never wastes anything, never wastes it, as in he forms our spiritual character in a way that we wouldn't have been before. That's a redemption. Redemption is he uses us to be able to help somebody else in a way that, like me, I couldn't help somebody in some ways if I haven't lost a child. But if you've lost a child, you can do that. I also think, and this is where I think as Christians, we're really woefully under resource as it relates to doctrine, just good old-fashioned doctrine and theology. You're going to see your child or your loved one again. You are. The most popular podcast I've ever done by far was John Burke, who's the leading authority on near-death experiences. 2,000 people he's personally interviewed who have died, had an encounter at the gates of heaven and an in-between experience, and saw loved ones and interact with loved ones and then came back. 2,000 of them. They're very, very consistent. I can't emphasize enough, when someone's going through pain, I just say, just listen to this. I mean, Matthew McConaughey was on my podcast. They asked to be on my podcast, and he was, of course, Matthew McConaughey was on your podcast. Yes, be on my podcast. Of course, that's shot to number one. John, his topic, he overcame Matthew McConaughey in like a few short months, because all of us have this pain And we remind ourselves, oh, I'm going to see my loved one again. And I think we've got to recognize that this life is going to be, it's going to be over like that. Boom. And it sucks. It's as painful as it is right now, but hope's coming. The Bible talks about this in Hebrews. It says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off the weight so that so heavily encumbers us. And one of those weights, I think, is holding on to our anger and grief of what happened to us that shouldn't have happened to us. You're right. It shouldn't have happened to you if the world was the way it was and it wasn't infected with sin. But when sin infected the world, it could only go downward. So let's throw off that bitterness that's there. And let's remember right now, there is a cloud of witnesses in heaven right now. Your loved ones who got redeemed through the grace of Jesus, they're aware of what you're going through right now, and you will be with them again. That's an incredible comfort.
Amen. Kathy Beecham, who started the healing group here at Crossroads, I can remember vividly when she was talking about her husband, Pete, who she lost, that she's like, I was in the shower one day and I just had this light bulb that went off that he's just not here. He's alive and he's thriving and he's somewhere else and I'm just not with him. And so this shift to seeing them as an eternal being and they're just not here with us.
Kathleen's a really, I called her Kathleen. Kathleen's a really good example. I mean, she's not in my family, but the two most painful deaths I've had in my life were Gil Hopkins, who is my spiritual grandfather, wept like a baby on that one, and Kathy Beecham. And I always thought, man, when Kathy retires, I never saw her dying. I just thought, at some point, this woman's getting old. She's gonna retire at some point, right? I thought, it's going to be a sad day because the wealth of wisdom she brings is crazy. And then she died pretty quickly. And then I went through the biggest crisis of my leadership ever. Went through leading Crossroads through the COVID crisis where everyone's pissed off at everybody all the time. And you're making decisions that you've never had to make, and every leader in every sort of organization is trying to figure it out, and you've got political tensions and racial tensions, and it was the most complex thing I've ever led. It was customized perfect for Kathy. Perfect. I mean, perfect. And I would think all the time, oh my gosh, if Kathy was here, she died at the worst time, right before it. I'm like, oh my gosh, what I wouldn't give for a steadying force of perspective and seasoning and all that stuff on it. And what I kept telling myself was, God might have taken Kathy at this time just to grow me up. Because I may have leaned into her too much. And maybe there's a work that God was going to do into me that he couldn't have done if Kathy was just the answer woman. And there is a growth, the kind of growth that comes through grief in all of us. And we hate it and it sucks. I'm not telling us to be Pollyanna and just make it be good. But just one of the tools you have in awareness is recognizing if you come through this, you're going to be a stronger, better, more mature, more complete version of Jesus than if you just had a vacation on the beach.
Yeah, and that strength is a choice. So many people, when they are faced with the immenseness of grief, you're going to process one way or another. And so some people choose to face it head on. I'm going to endure well. I'm going to grieve my loved one well because they deserve that. And then other people get stuck in this identity of loss. I'm the person who experienced extreme loss. I'm that person now. And so tell me a little bit about how you would nudge that person in taking the first steps of enduring. Because what can happen is, you know, we've seen it time and again of people getting stuck there for 10 years. And every day is like that first day.
Right.
And that it becomes a waste of a life. It becomes a waste of a purpose. And what a hard way to live. Those chains of just loss.
Yeah, I'll go back to my story and give two examples of that. This all comes down to the Bible. The church offers a service that nobody else offers. And I don't mean Crossroads. I just mean vibrant followers of Christ. We offer a service of connection that isn't involved in any place else in our culture. We offer a service of impact in the world that's hard to find. We also offer service of eternal perspective and grounding and rootedness that the rest of the world really can't offer. My first massive loss was a house fire where we lost everything we owned with no renter's insurance, and we got out just in the nick of time with our kids' lives and our lives, and we lost our dog. Our dog woke us up, and then he died. Horrible, horrible, right? Crying, awful. And the first thing I did, I called my... I'll make a short story. We went and lived with our my in-laws that night. And the first thing I did, got up in the morning after about 3 hours of sleep, had my time with God, and open up the Psalms and read the Psalms, because a high percentage of the Psalms are known as laments. I sat in it and went through it and just lived in it. And it's a gift in the Bible. It's why there's a whole book called Lamentations. This is part of our faith. Let's go through the journey and let's embrace it. Let's actually feel. And so I did that, and I grieved, and I wept before God, and I did all that. And so I would encourage people, go through that and do that. And then the other one was what I just mentioned with Carrie when she died. We had a grief service. And I said, I need to grieve. This is not good. And probably the whole church needs to grieve. So what does the Bible say? The Bible talks about tearing of your clothes. That's a regular thing. Tearing of clothes, putting ashes on you, all this stuff. And so we had a grieving service. And through the years, we had given out T-shirts for go trips, T-shirts for volunteers. And we had like closets of old T-shirts that we're not using anymore. So I instructed, hey, let's bring out all the T-shirts we have. Let's lamb up on the stage. And let's emote. Let's have a night of just emoting and give people the ability to put on a shirt and rip it and tear it. And I then had like dozens of people say to me, wow, I lost somebody 20 years ago. And I've just now started to heal because I realized I never grieved. And this is the thing with spiritual formation. Someone says, well, I've been a Christian for 20 years. The truth be told, you've been a Christian for 1 year 20 times. There's lessons God wanted in your first year. You said, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to do it, whatever it is. Spiritual maturity is when you pass tests and trials that God gives you, and then he gives you another trial and another test. That's what the book of James says. Trials, tests, and tribulations. And it was really cool to see people actually move because they grieve. So that's why I love the ministry we have going on here and people who are grieving. Actually listening to this right now. You're still listening 40 minutes in or whatever it is, it shows that you're engaged. This is going to be difficult. Sometimes you're going around in circles. It's also not a linear process. It's the old illustration of going up a mountain. When you go up a mountain, you cut back and forth, but you're still going higher, but you're cutting back and forth. It's not a straight line. So just keep processing, keep going, keep talking to God, keep talking to others, keep getting information when you can get it. Keep venting, all this. And, you know, you'll feel like sometimes you're going in circles, but actually you're going in circles, probably going up higher the mountains to get to the peak.
And that must have been so healing for so many people to be able to see you in the rawness of grief, because it is such an individual experience. We all grieve very differently. And yet, God has big shoulders. Like, right. He wants our messy. Right. He wants the outburst. Right. And for me, when I was initially in those early stages of grief, really trying to contain that with control of what do I need to do, the logistics, the day-to-day, and that grief is going to leak out one way or another. For me, it was anger, you know, having meltdowns, right, and really short with people. And so there's this physical release that happens when we do have those moments with God, right, where we're willing to be transparent and broken. And, you know, God, how dare, right, you? Like, how dare you take my sister? You, right, know, things like that. I mean, I have to imagine that for you, you did feel physically lighter after some of that lamenting.
I felt, it wasn't like I left that night going, oh, okay, things are good now. But I felt like, all right, I took another step in the process here. That's what I felt like. And I knew enough about the process that it was important to me. And then, of course, when I saw the next day, the text and the emails came in from people who were thankful, I thought, oh, okay, yeah, God doesn't waste anything. So maybe he needed to break me. Shoot, I don't know. Would he allow a woman to fall to her death just so he could get hundreds of other people to heal up and wound, heal themselves up? I don't know. Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, Brian, I so appreciate your time. I'm going to give you a final question that we always ask people.
Jesus.
Yeah, that's the always.
That's always the answer.
Got it. Yep.
Yeah, it's always the answer.
You know, grief, I think, is so often talked about in a really clinical standpoint, even from a church standpoint of, you know, just trust in God and it's going to get better. And it's not that messy piece. And so we always ask people, what does good grief look like?
Yeah. Well, let me back up and have a step before I say what good. It is the same. It's the same thing. Well, I'll tell you what's horrible. What horrible grief looks like. Horrible grief looks like you're on your own. When we're in isolation, things just don't go well at all. I kind of wish we could make this required listening for everybody at Crossroads who has a charmed life. Because I tell people once in a while, and they get really upset when I say this. I say, your worst days are ahead of you. People hate when I say that. You know, they're like, wait a minute. They're like, wait a minute, you're giving me a curse. You're putting a curse on me. Aren't my best days ahead of me? Are my best days? Okay, I believe that. I believe your best days are. But seriously, your worst days are ahead of you. I don't know what they are, but they are. They are. Your worst days, it could be the last 5 seconds of your death that's incredibly painful. It could be the last 5 years of your life when you're on a walker. I don't know what it is. It's pretty safe to say your worst days are ahead of you. We've got to believe it. Because Jesus says, in this life, you will have trouble. It's a promise. And it's not a promise we put on our refrigerator. But it is a promise. One of the things to do is to firm up our relational base, your friendships. You're putting money in the bank as you build deep, significant friendships right now. And the people who come to the grief group are probably getting new friends that they meet in the grief group. That's wonderful. That's why this wouldn't work if we just gave you a podcast. You can't process this on your own. You need to be with people who have skin on, who are going through similar stuff or are a few steps ahead like you. You know, who do I want? Another person who lost a child or somebody who actually lost a sister to be with me. Mm-hmm. Both are helpful, you know? So I think that we've got to learn from the book of Job, again, another whole book of the Bible around suffering and loss. And I know Christians who intentionally don't read the book because they don't want to be reminded of it. It's like, oh, I'm putting my fingers in my ears. Ah, la, la, don't want to hear la, 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 la. The clueless, ignorant believers that want to ignore pain and suffering only do so to their peril because it's coming your way, dude. Dudette, it's coming your way. It is what it is. You're not better than Jesus. You're not better than disciples. You're not better than, you're not. It happened to them, it's going to happen to you. And what do you do is prepare. In Job, his main blessing is his three friends who come to him. And they just sit with him in the mud puddle. They sit and say nothing. The problem is when they start to say something. They actually give him a lot of spiritual truth, but it's the wrong truth or at the wrong time. That's why the grief program we have here is so culled and tested. Like, okay, people can take this right now. Let's give them this. They can take this right now. But the foundation of it is friends. So I would say, everybody, develop your friendship network. Lean into them. Friendships are everything, and it's not the information that's going to get you another place. It's the information with the right people by your side.
Surviving Grief is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio. If you'd like to connect or share your own story, reach out to us at podcasts@crossroads.net. We'll see you next time.